Cisco is pleased to present part two of a panel discussion series, the Future of Public Sector Workforce and Workspace Sustainability Series, here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today's topic is scaling workforce interactions to improve confidence and decision-making. Our guests today are Dave Wennergren, Deputy CIO at the Department of Defense, Becky Harris, she's Program Director, Program Executive Office of the Global Information Grid Enterprise Services, and that's at the Defense Information Systems Agency, and Gerald Charles, Director of the Public Sector Internet Business Solutions Group at Cisco. And great to have you all here this morning, and let's get right to it. Let's ask the two government folks first how your agency is actually promoting collaboration and knowledge sharing, and tell us some success stories. Dave, why don't we start with you?
Absolutely. It's great to be here with you, Tom. So yeah, the world is changing dramatically, and we're in the midst of a change with it. As you look at the power and speed and agility that this world of mass collaboration brings to you, it's become front and center to just about everything we do from across the Department of Defense. As you look at this desire to move away from the world of the past where we built big IT systems in a standalone way to a world of what we would describe as a service-oriented approach, where you separate data from applications and make stuff easily served up so that people can use it for purposes maybe you never even dreamed possible. You merge that service-oriented approach with this sort of Web 2.0 phenomenon that says, you know, what it used to take computer programmers weeks to do in a race floor computer room, you can have a young major or lieutenant colonel do overnight in the, you know, upstairs in their office and post it and have it available for reuse tomorrow. So there is a speed that's happening that's just really transforming the way the department does business. We have a data strategy and a services strategy that you can find on the DoDCIO website if you want to learn more about it, that talks about how you're going to make this transition to a service-oriented world. And you see it happening all around us. Classic examples, maritime domain awareness, an example of many agencies keeping information in legacy databases about commercial vessels and cargoes and crews. Could you make that information available quickly to anybody? And the answer is yes, if you avoid the temptation of replacing the five or six legacy systems with a new giant Uber system and instead say, make the data available to be consumed, overlay it on some tool like Google Earth, and now I can get on any DoD computer, stick in my common access card, go find Maritime Domain Awareness Service, click on any harbor in the world, see the cargoes, the crews, where they are, what's going on. That kind of stuff's happening all over the place, and it's happening across the mission areas of the department. You look at everything from what's going on with Intellipedia and the intelligence community to the use of wikis to make policy happen in a more rapid manner than the old way of doing business in a serial way. And it's a really exciting world. We are seeing the uptake in use of social networking services more and more to allow collaboration inside your boundaries and outside your boundaries. And I know we're going to get to talk more about that as the morning goes on. So let's have at it.
All right. And Becky Harris from DISA. Now, you're part of DOD. Does that sound like DOD to you? Does it sound like DISA?
It sure does. And thanks, Tom, for having me today. I would say that we're right at the front line of providing collaboration and knowledge sharing capabilities for the Department of Defense. My organization really delivers these information sharing capabilities and infrastructure for the DOD users, as well as we use them also in DISA. And so what I'd like to first talk about is what we've done with collaboration. So we basically have provided an enterprise collaboration capability for the Department of Defense that allows you to do audio, video, web conferencing right from your desktop, to do instant messaging and chat. And what we have seen this capability is essentially take off in the department. We have over 350,000 users who use the collaboration capability. We have, on average, 26 million meeting minutes a month that people are collaborating. And what we have seen is that this collaboration tool is a catalyst for really changing how we operate. These information sharing capabilities are being integrated into operations. And from my perspective, that's one of the most exciting facets to see. The DOD is a global organization, so the better you can connect the warfighters as well as the strategic and the command and control organizations to provide shared shared situational awareness is really, I think, the glue that is holding the department together and enabling us to get efficiencies and economies of scales as we roll out these capabilities. So I look forward in talking more about this topic today and sharing more what we're doing in this space.
And Gerald Charles from Cisco, you have the sort of view across the entire federal government and the work that you do. And this collaboration and sharing, we hear a lot about that. How can it actually improve the quality of decision-making? Because ultimately, that's what we're after here. What have you seen?
Well, good morning, and thanks for having me back. How's everybody doing? Both Dave and Becky really did a great job talking about all the different things that are happening, not just in DOD, but as you mentioned, Tom, really across government and across society. And it's really reflecting how we in society work totally differently. We're a very mobile workforce. Becky talked about that we're actually global, so it's not just regional or national. We're geographically dispersed. We work together much more than we work individually. Research has shown that in today's knowledge economy, we work together with one or two or more people more than 85% of the time versus only 10 or 15 years ago, maybe 15% of the time. The work environments that we are in, there's multiple. We don't just come to the office or to the industrial park or to the factory floor. Where our workspace really happens wherever we are, and we're highly mobile. So all these really reflect kind of the new future of work and how we work. And Dave and Becky really talked about how DOD is responding to that with a plethora of examples of how that is changing and all the new technology and business processes are required, you know, to make that happen.
And a big part of this, I think, is managing the workforce and management strategies. And, you know, at one time, people came to work and they went to their cubicles or offices and you sent things down to the typing pool to be typed to you, if you remember those days. Things are all different now with everyone being mobile. The collaboration that you just talked about, the building of the trusted communities that Gerald mentioned. So, Dave Wennergren, how does that all translate? How does all those changes translate into how you manage the workforce to make sure that they're receptive and able to most take advantage of these kinds of advances?
Yeah, well, you know, in the Department of Defense, we have a highly nomadic workforce already. And so this ability to be able to be connected anywhere is driving all sorts of things. Whether or not you look at, you know, work being offloaded from ships back to shore, trying to have better partnerships with your industry partners, with academia, with other governments, you just see over and over again this ability, this need to be able to get on any computing device and find the people and information that you need to get your job done. So more and more people are going to have to be connected from anywhere. And from anywhere means whether you're telecommuting or whether you're doing continuity of operations, disaster response kind of stuff, you have to be able to be connected and you have to be able to get to the information that you need to get the job done. So a certain component of that is about technology and about being able to do, if you will, trusted computing from untrusted devices. So, you know, the first wave is that you can take your laptop and be connected on the road. Then we get to the point where we say, well, you know, reservists need to be able to gain access when they're not on reserve duty. You need to be able to get access from a library kiosk. You need to be able to get access from home. So there are these aspects of technology that everybody's working on to be able to do trusted computing from what would have been formerly untrusted devices. And then coupled with that, the thing that I touched on a moment ago, which is this idea about data and services. So, you know, I've been hyping, it's all about the data for a while and trying to convince people that data really was a sexy topic. I feel slightly vindicated because in the March issue of The Economist magazine, they had a big data supplement and they described the sexy job for 2010 is data scientist. So I don't know, perhaps The Economist's set a low bar for what's sexy, but I'm going to ride with it for a while and say, you know, when people have started to understand that you could separate your data and make it available to be consumed, and then you couple that with this strategy that Becky and her team at DISA are so crucial to us about, that, you know, if you have these core services that are available to everyone, a collaboration service available to everybody in DOD, content staging, content discovery, identity management, security services, then every local command doesn't have to duplicate that work. But what happens in a service-oriented world that didn't happen in the old big IT system world of the past is that then local people can use those core enterprise services and then have the freedom and agility to develop their own services for their own solutions. So whether you're a logistician in California or meteorologist in Mississippi, you can quickly build a web service, call the enterprise services, and get something deployed that could be used right away. And that's changing the nature of work everywhere.
And Becky, is that something you find is in huge demand from DISA, which, after all, is the provisioner of a lot of the bandwidth and services needed by all DOD agencies to get that done?
Yes, Tom. I think DISA is becoming more of an asset to deliver enterprise capabilities, shared services that basically enable the Department of Defense, wherever you are, to accomplish your mission. Doesn't mean that DISA does it all, that DISA partners with the services, the agencies, and the combatant commands to deliver capability. As Dave said, it is all about the data. It's about exposing that data so that it can be reused and combined with other data and information to meet mission requirements. The other thing that the challenge that we're having is everything is faster. It's all about speed. It's about being able to get capability in the hands of the end user more efficiently. And to be able to accomplish that, it's about sharing and reusing and not duplicating efforts. In addition, it has to be easy to use. If it's hard to use, warfighters aren't going to use it, end users aren't going to use it. The services and agencies aren't going to come to DISA to use our services if they're cumbersome and hard to use. So working jointly and together, that is our main thrust, is to make these services available, easy to use, and provide value-added information.
And Gerald, what do you find? I mean, do people change their work processes because new technology comes in and forces them to? Or do they want to say, let's change how we do things and then bring in the technology to enable what it is they want to do in the first place?
Well, it's actually
sort of a chicken and egg question.
Yes, it is. But it actually reflects, it's a little bit of both. So the business need always is a driver in terms of what we need to do. But many times as a new technology or a new paradigm or a new process emerges, that also changes things too. I'd actually like to step back a little bit to really even highlight more the points that Becky and Dave had made about collaboration and where their focus is on data and services, because collaboration is a word that we've talked about for a long period of time, but let's really define it, because I think we finally have arrived at an age where we can really define it, actually measure it, and then make business case-based decisions to drive it forward. And that really gets to the heart of the number of the initiatives that Dave and Becky were talking about. So if you think about collaboration or the elements of it or the dimensions of it, one of which we're talking about today, is confidence. So now bringing that back to the question that you asked, Tom, you know, which changes, you know, one or the other. Remember, how well we collaborate is also based upon the trust and the context that we have in our decision-making or in the processes. It's based upon the people that we interact with. It's based upon the information or data that we have. So as both Becky and Dave had mentioned, they're really focused on being able to deliver that data and those services globally to a very highly mobile workforce and population.
So it's almost as if the work processes and the data and the technology for delivering the data and using it are all separate things that can be shifted and redeployed as needed. Is that a good way to put it?
Yeah, I think so. And I think we just touched on a really important point that, you know, people are looking for change sometimes, sometimes not. If you want to help an organization change, though, it's a lot easier to sort of ride the waves of change that they see around them. So when people get excited about stuff in their regular lives, right, they kind of want to be able to use those tools more effectively at work, too. So if you think about the advent of personal computers, the emergence of the World Wide Web, the proliferation of BlackBerries and other PDAs, these were all sort of things that people wanted more of. So if you could help them get over their maybe angst of change by giving them some tools that they were used to using. Right now, we have that sort of power with this Web 2.0 phenomenon, that people see what happens when you can actually connect with people through a tool like Facebook, or stay in touch with what's going on by looking at a video on YouTube. And so they want those kind of capabilities available to them, and you can sort of help get them to make their processes more effective by leveraging the ability of, you know, you'll have access to these tools that you're comfortable using now to get your job done.
And I want to ask you all about a certain tool that seems like a detail of all this, but I think it's really important, because a lot of the interaction that we do online and through some of these tools and social networking takes the place in some cases of actually getting together in person, because, as you say, you know, as we've noted, DOD is a far-flung organization. Everyone that wants to get together simply can't all the time. And so we've seen the emergence of something called telepresence in recent years, where people can be in a room and it's kind of like video conferencing, but taken to an nth degree. And tell us about how that's coming into agencies and how that affects this whole issue.
It's a really important topic, and we are really counting on the DISA team and Becky and her colleagues over there to help deliver on that future. So they delivered a defense collaboration tool. So everyone across the Department of Defense, all 3.5 million people, have a common platform collaboration to be able to see and talk to each other. You can just see how this is going to grow and grow and grow, right? The ability to be able to be connected to people. We see it happening every day. And so we're counting on the DISA team to really be thoughtful about as they go forward, how can we continue to take advantage of what the future of video teleconferencing looks like, everything over IP, what does this rich telepresence kind of environment really mean for us?
Yeah, thanks, Dave. The next step, again, is to integrate the room-based and the desktop video capabilities and experience. So, again, no matter where you are able to meet and collaborate with your peers. In addition, as the network becomes more robust and powerful, we want to take advantage of the unified communication, the capabilities that, again, no matter where you are, you can be reached. If I'm not at my desk or my phone, the network is smart enough to route your call to me on my cell phone, or send me if I'm on chat, to notify me that way. So again, it's giving that flexibility to reach a person no matter where they are. And as the devices and the networks become more powerful, we want to integrate those capabilities and take advantage of them for our user base.
But I wonder if seeing and hearing the people actually takes this whole networking idea to the next level, because it does get you close to actual human interaction, which is, I think, still considered the best. It's just not practical all the time.
Yeah, I think there is nothing that takes the place of the being able to see who you're speaking with. And I think that that's an important aspect of making sure that you're delivering a capability that is very similar to how we interact one-on-one. It doesn't mean that you have to do it all the time, but it's nice to have that that reaction. To be able to see someone's body language or facial expressions does contribute to the meeting experience. So I think there's a combination. The other thing, though, I think we have to be careful is that we don't forget about the one-on-one interactions as well. I think that's important for the workforce, especially the young workforce, is to not to forget to deal with people one-on-one, get out of your cube and go meet someone from that perspective.
And Gerald, that one-on-one can happen across 10,000 miles nowadays some of these new technologies.
It most definitely can. And, you know, of course, we at Cisco love to talk about telepresence. But what we've really focused on is telepresence is very much integrated in how we do our business, but it's just part of an overall rich media experience, or it's just part of driving confidence and trust in our decision making, or it's part of a larger scale video strategy, which Becky was really pointing out. So if you think about the immersive experiences, which is, I think, where you're going, that we're looking for, how do we have that face-to-face? How do we have that eye-to-eye when we've got global teams, when we're, you know, very much in transit or mobile? And so telepresence is one of a number of suite of solutions or strategies that agencies are looking to implement. And I think both DISA and frankly, GSA are really now at the forefront in the U.S. public sector.
You're listening to the Future of Public Sector Workforce and Workspace Sustainability series, brought to you by Cisco on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
Federal news and information just got more fun and interesting. Amy Morris joins Tom Temin on The Federal Drive, weekday mornings from 6 to 10. Tom and Amy tailor their show for Feds on the Go with usable information from trustworthy and seasoned journalists. You're going to learn, but they also might make you laugh. The Federal Drive with Tom Temin and Amy Morris, 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. on Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m.
Welcome back to the Future of Public Sector Workforce and Workspace Sustainability series, brought to you by Cisco on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today's topic is scaling workforce interactions to improve confidence and decision-making. Our guests are Dave Wennergren, Deputy CIO of the Department of Defense, Becky Harris, Program Manager, Program Executive Office for the Global Information Grid Enterprise Services at the Defense Information Systems Agency, and Gerald Charles, Director of Public Sector Internet Business Solutions Group at Cisco. And I think one of the top areas here is to think about the workforce itself and how it's changing as a new generation comes into the workforce. And so how are they affecting the work processes, and what do agencies need to do to meet their expectations and get the most out of them as they enter the workforce. Dave Wennergren?
Yeah, we think it's, you know, it's got to be a top priority for every information professional. Well, frankly, for everyone across government. There are these two fascinating things that are happening at the same time. The one is this amazing technology thing that's happening about being able to be connected and get things done in a new and different way. And then if you couple that with the fact that like people like me are getting ready to leave, right? So people of the baby boom generation are growing up and they're going to be moving along. And so you look at the Generation X that comes behind us and that population is a smaller population base. And then the next sort of boom, if you will, is this, the millennials, often referred to as the net generation workforce, the first generation to have grown up in an internet age. And so these young men and women are going to take over leadership positions at a much younger age as they fill in the ranks of the big, you know, baby boom generation as they leave the workforce. And so we on the Federal CIO Council thought that that was a crucial enough topic that we produced a net generation workforce guide, which is available on the CIO Council website if you haven't had a chance to look at it yet. And it really kind of walks through this issue about, so there's this issue about demographics and about the workforce changing. And so how will you be an employer of choice? How will you attract and retain this workforce for the future and then give them the environment that will unleash their creativity? And so, you know, you have to understand a lot of things. Right. So the workforce guide talks about the demographic issues of the workforce today and how that's changing. It talks about the values and imperatives and what really matters to the workforce that's coming to us. And then it talks through that there are actually ways to use the federal system in a better way, right, to be able to think about what does it mean in terms of hiring and retaining, how does it change supervisory relationships. And it really sort of comes down to two sets of things. You got to have the technology in place that you're going to be an employer of choice, that they're going to be able to use the tools at work that they're used to using in their personal lives. And then how do you change what it means to offer them the kind of environment that they're looking for, the kind of job opportunities. And it's a challenging thing. And while the Net Generation Workforce Guide was built for, if you will, information leaders across the federal government, I encourage supervisors of any functional area to take a look at it because it really is something that we will have to work on together.
Gerald, Charles?
Dave really teed up part of what we talked about in the first panel and then getting into now in terms of how do you drive confidence and trust. So today's workforce, the four different generations or the four generations that we have are truly different and distinct. You know, as he talked about from traditionalists and baby boomers all the way to the millennials. How they collaborate is different, how they make decisions are different, how they use technology is different, the expectations are different. So that means, you know, for us as professionals delivering an environment, business processes, and technology to support that, we have to really recognize that, and we have to, again, going back to providing a continuum of solutions and a continuum of processes, because the confidence that we have or the greater confidence that we have in something, the quicker we're going to make a decision. So if we're doing that now in a very collaborative environment with teams that are spread all over the place, we've got to recognize that continuum of strategies or video strategies that will support that.
And Becky, how does that translate into the service offerings that DISA tries to develop, you know, outside of the warfighting support, but maybe it's integrated into that as well?
Yeah, yes, it is, Tom. I think that today's workforce is more comfortable with sharing. So we're moving essentially from a need to know to a need to share culture. In addition to having the tools available, they need to be integrated into the work processes. They need to be part of the way that we do business and not an add-on. And I think that in itself helps the workforce that's been around with us for a while embrace these new technologies. In addition, I think we need to realize that today's workforce doesn't look as work as a place. They look at it as something they must do. And so what we do in DISA, and I think DISA is a leader in this, is we really advocate telework. And so over 45% of the DISA employees telework today, and they're able to be as effective as they are if they were sitting in a workstation in the office. In addition, every meeting that we have, we enable it with our collaboration tool so that employees who are teleworking can seamlessly come into the organization. And we're not the only ones doing that. We're seeing that across the department. The other thing that I think DISA is preparing for is we're getting ready to move up to Fort Meade as part of the base realignment. And so what we're doing is people who have been laying out the building have been are basically setting it up with collaborative workspaces. So instead of having traditional desks that have barriers around them, they're opening them up and to have more group interaction and collaboration. So I think it's really exciting about not only what's happening from a technology, but what we're trying to do from the work environment to enable and attract the best and brightest.
And Gerald, what does the manager do to accommodate all of these different expectations, the multi-generational quality of the workforce? What's a good way to manage in this era of those generations overlaid with all this technological change?
Well, actually, there's kind of an easy part and a hard part. Much of what the manager is going to do is going to stay the same because the manager is really focused on delivering outcomes and performance results. And that's not going to be different no matter where somebody works. Even if everyone was together in the office environment, it's not like the manager is really looking over their shoulder for every minute of the day. So just kind of recognizing that those things won't change is a big cultural difference that a lot of managers are still working through. The other side of it is really recognizing what these changes are and the fact that we are working differently, that we really have four distinct generations in the workforce, and that their styles are different and how they use technology is different. So just recognition of that. And then, as Becky mentioned, a number of things that DISA is doing in terms of the workspaces, the collaborative work environments. We like to say even telework is 20th century, 21st century is mobile worker. Because you could be anywhere, not just at home. So recognizing those different things, but still managing to the business requirements.
And let's talk about some of the issues surrounding movement and mobility, especially business travel. You know, I have a 1954 poster from TWA when it shows the young man and the older guy sitting together on a plane. And if you really wanted to get places, you had to get on a plane and travel. And of course, that was in the days before there were such things as tourist class seats. And you know what it's like traveling now. But I think a lot of agencies are seeing that there are big reductions in the logistics and expense of travel thanks to rich media. And Dave Winogrand, what are you seeing at the Pentagon in that regard?
I think, you know, there's this recognition that one tool doesn't fit everything, right? And so, you know, at one end of the spectrum, you have like bandwidth-rich environments where you can do really immersive multimedia experiences where, you know, you just really feel like you can reach out and touch the person. And then some places you're disconnected or low bandwidth or intermittent kind of users, and you have to be looking for a different answer there. So part of the prize here is to be thinking about there are many different ways to get at this, right? The ability to do instant messaging as opposed to just sending an email is much more immediate, has an immediacy in a two-way conversation that doesn't happen with a one-way email, right? The ability to use collaborative spaces allows you to post and work on a document simultaneously. The ability to do better VTCs and things like that is powerful in terms of seeing face-to-face contact. But we got to think broadly. I mean, there are a lot of people doing things with virtual worlds, another way to be connected in a way that's non-traditional. So if you think Second Life is just a game, then you really are sort of missing the point. If you think Facebook is just a way to connect with old buddies and stuff, then you're sort of missing the point, because these are the tools that people are using to not only take a college class online, but to actually save lives during disaster relief in a place like Haiti.
And Becky, are you seeing more demand for DISA services as a strategy to help reduce physical travel on airplanes and seats and hotels and the whole nine yards that goes with that?
Yes, Tom. I think we're not only seeing the getting on the plane, the need for that to go down, but just local travel in and out. The NCR here is facilitated by being able to use these collaboration capabilities. The other thing I think they allow you to do is not only save travel, but to bring in a more robust set of experts to work on a particular issue or to participate in a meeting. Oftentimes, different organizations may have limited travel resources, and so getting all the experts together can be a challenge. But having these tools really does allow some people who can travel to meet face-to-face, but to open up the meeting to a wide variety of individuals to participate. The other thing that we found is that these tools are allowed to help people with training. So you can do a training module, you can archive it onto the collaboration tool, and then it's accessible to anyone who wants to get it when they have the time to take the class. In addition, we have had a number of conferences, and we have broadcasted our conference or track so that others who could not make the travel for a variety of reasons can participate. So I think the agility, the ad hoc, the real-time nature of these tools really are extremely powerful, and we're just starting, I think, personally on the tip of the iceberg to see how they can be leveraged for not only efficiencies for costs, but really to get the job done in a much more expeditious manner.
In fact, you could probably fly to Dallas from Washington faster than you can get to Fort Belvoir to Fort Meade some at certain times of the day. Gerald?
Tom, we really have an interesting story at Cisco. When we first developed an integrated telepresence totally into our business, our CEO, John Chambers, actually cut our travel budget by 20%, just straight off the board. And this was before the economy turned. However, at the same time, he said we are going to get closer, more collaborative, and he required us to get much closer to our customers. And so at first that seemed like a strange type of paradigm, but what we really found, and Dave was touching on this, is we got much more clarity on the type of interactions that we had, the collaboration that we were having, you know, why and what we wanted to accomplish, and then we started recognizing the right tools or the right processes to meet that. So going back to is what Dave mentioned, kind of the right type of video strategy, whether it's, you know, telepresence, whether it's a web conference, a video conference, all those things really go into the business functions and what it is that you're trying to accomplish.
And Dave Wennergren, you mentioned social media and the point of Facebook and the point of some of these things, which people miss, as you say, if it's just connecting with old college buddies or worse. So tell us how social media is best used and what are some examples of the way it's being used in a productive way at some of the components you see.
Yeah, there's just this growth of the use of mass collaboration and social networking services, so much so that we felt the need to put out a policy this year to help remind people that, you know, there are these amazing tools out there. If you think about how to use them responsibly and effectively, you could really make a difference. And so it's sort of a continuum. And at one end of the continuum are like highly sensitive internal kinds of conversations that you wouldn't want to necessarily do in the public commons. So the human intelligence analysts in the intelligence community use a tool called ASpace, which is like a Facebook or a MySpace kind of tool, but entirely within the boundaries of a classified network, right? And then at the other end of the spectrum, you see people using tools like Facebook a lot, and absolutely for a number of different reasons. So it's not enough that it is good enough that we're just using it for things like soldiers, sailors, airmen, and marines to be able to stay in contact with their families while they're deployed. But we're doing so much more with it. We see it being used for collaboration with non-government organizations. I mentioned disaster relief. You need look no farther than Haiti to see how tools like Twitter and Facebook were used to help find people on things. And so you're seeing powerful uses of these tools that allow people to connect outside of their boundaries, to collaborate with people they might not otherwise have had an opportunity to collaborate with. And you're just going to see more and more of that. So we're going to have to get over the fact that, you know, it's different and what our concerns are about it, and think differently about if you have a really highly trained workforce that understands issues like operational security and, you know, what's the kind of stuff you talk about in public and what don't you talk about in public, understanding issues like aggregation, that sometimes you can connect dots if you put a lot of different pieces of information that in isolation don't seem like they make much of a difference, but together make a difference. So if you have a highly trained workforce that understands those sorts of issues, then you need to give them the ability to have access to those kinds of tools, the social networking services tools, so they can collaborate in ways they never dreamed possible before.
Becky?
Just to add on what Dave said is we have been leveraging a great partnership we have with the DNI. They have a capability called Intel Link and Intelpedia. They are able to pilot a number of innovative Web 2.0 capabilities. And what we do is we partner with them and we use these tools. We collect feedback from our customers. And then we, if they're taking off and their customers have value, and then we work with them to rapidly scale them onto the various networks. So I think, again, it's about appreciating the use of these tools, selecting the tool that is the right one for the job that you're doing, and then learning from that. And I think as we use some of these Web 2.0 tools, it's not unusual for there to be bumps along the way. But I would say that what we shouldn't do is just revert back to our shell when we run into one of those bumps. We should embrace it, learn from it, and then see how we can bring that capability into the Department of Defense for the warfighter.
And Gerald, how do you measure success in that new collaborative Web 2.0 wiki type of world? What are the metrics that agencies should use?
Well, they're going to use the same metrics that they're using today to measure their business and advance their business as they advance their decision-making or increase the pace or the time of their decision-making. What's really powerful about all of those Web 2.0 tools is they provide context and trust again. And context and trust is part of what we as human beings need to make decisions or to have confidence in the decision-making that we're going through. So as Becky mentioned, still needing that eye-to-eye contact, these social media tools are allowing us to have some of those things. We may not always have that direct eye-to-eye contact on every occasion. They really provide context and trust. And when you have that, that speeds decision-making. So things happen faster. We accomplish our business goals faster.
And does any of this enable decision-making by the decision-maker? In other words, does it change who makes final decisions at all?
Well, yes, it does, but a lot of that's happening naturally now where the decision maker is a team or a community, you know, or a board, and it's less and less an individual. So going back into today's knowledge economy where we're not working in isolation, the collective teams are making these decisions. Those collective teams are socializing their thoughts, their analysis through, you know, wikis and social media tools, as well as through having more and more of that interaction no matter where they are.
Well, that's an interesting process. I mean, especially in DOD, where you have a tradition of command and control, and they talk about the belly button to push, the responsible party for something. So how does that play out, Dave Winogrand?
So there's sort of two themes that are happening here that Gerald touched on, right? The one is that, you know, the power of collaboration. So if you can get the right people together, you're going to make a better, you're going to have a better outcome, right? Better work product, a better set of options, those sorts of things. So this power of collaboration creates a better answer than the one person doing it on their own. Look no farther than Intellipedia, which Becky already mentioned, right? And so in Intellipedia, the intelligence analyst posts what they know about a topic. Others can collaborate and make it better, just like Wikipedia does. And so if you have that sort of set of work going on, that you're collaborating as you need to get the best answers available, and then you create a situation where the right person has the right information at the right time, right? I mean, hierarchical command and control models have a purpose as long as you don't allow the distance and time to not allow you to have the speed and agility that you need, right? So the idea would be that if the right photograph is available to the Marine in Afghanistan, then, you know, he or she will be able to make the right choice, and they'll know commander's intent because information will flow from up and down the chain of command more quickly, but also the person who needs to make decisions now, wherever they are in the organization, has the ability to do that.
What we've done here with these collaborative tools is we've really given the decision maker more time to look at the data and look at the courses of actions and to make their decision. In the past, it was most of the time was spent collecting the information and then assembling it and then coordinating it with a number of various stakeholders. And today, everybody's working essentially together from the get-go. And therefore, when we do have to make a decision and it does have to be raised to a level, that decision maker has much more time than they have had in the past. And it is directly related to the tools, but also the change in us collaborating and the culture changes that we're seeing across the Department of Defense.
And Secretary Gates has called upon the department to save lots of money over the next few years, and he's given an assignment to the Pentagon headquarters structure as well as to the armed services. And Gerald, do you find that these kinds of tools and the decision-making that it engenders or the style or or manner of decision-making can also help organizations operate flatter and more efficiently.
Yes, they can, but we're still very early in the stage. In fact, in our own company, we've really moved to this collaborative board and council construct where the boards themselves are the ones that are responsible for the decisions. But we're early, so we're having great results. I don't know yet if we can say, you know, how far reaching those results will be, but we are seeing that. I do want to say, though, that I don't want to lose a point that Dave had made. It's not like command and control is going to go away. There is a certain point in time where when you get to fundamental execution where you've got to go and execute. And so we really have to recognize where the balance of that is. And I think that's where we as organizations in the public sector are really trying to figure out right now.
But it also sounds like it can reduce the effect of rank differential or grade differential in making sure that opinions are listened to objectively for the content and the value that they have and not who it is that's offering it. It seems like social media can improve that area too.
Well, again, it's all about the right information, the right person at the right time, and good things will happen, right? So you're not trying to replace the commander's intent, right? But you're trying to help make sure that, as Becky said very well, right, that you're not spending all your time trying to find the information, that the information is readily available for people to act upon. And then the right person in the right place in the chain of command can take the actions they need to get the mission done.
You're listening to the Future of Public Sector Workforce and Workspace Sustainability Series, brought to you by Cisco on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
The Dorebeck Insider, hosted by award-winning journalist and free thinker Chris Dorebeck. Engage your mind every afternoon from 3 to 7 as Chris engages the best minds in federal procurement, management, IT, and human resources. The Dorebeck Insider takes on subjects critical for an efficient government. Chris's guests answer the questions you want answered. Tune in to hear how the news shapes your daily interactions in the federal space. The Dorebeck Insider, weekday afternoons from 3 to 7, only on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Welcome back to the Future of Public Sector Workforce and Workspace Sustainability Series, brought to you by Cisco, here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today's topic is scaling workforce interactions to improve confidence and decision-making. Our guests are Dave Wennergren, Deputy CIO of the Department of Defense, Becky Harris, Program Manager, Program Executive Office for the Global Information Grid Enterprise Services at the Defense Information Systems Agency, and Gerald Charles, Director of Public Sector Internet Business Solutions Group at Cisco. And earlier, we've been talking about a lot of different ways of interaction, all the way from text messaging, which is becoming popular, to deeply immersive experiences where we have up to the level of telepresence, which is almost a three-dimensional type of you're really there presence. We've also talked about the avatar and the Second Life type of experience. And these all require enablement. So, Gerald Charles, let's start with you. How do you deliver the capability to be able to have these services that you need to scale them to what it is the situation demands?
I think, as we had touched upon a little bit earlier, now more and more organizations are understanding what's the experience they have to deliver based upon the business function or process that they have to execute, or based upon what's the outcome that they want to have. So some things can be as simple as, you know, a piece of paper, a text message, exchanging an email, and people have the confidence to make decisions in that. Others, as Becky touched upon a little bit earlier, you do need a more of that warm feel. We as human beings do require all of our senses. So how can we have that immersive experience where we can see the proverbial eyeballs, we can kind of get a feel for where somebody is? Do we really trust, you know, what they're saying so that we could make a decision? And so there's a continuum of these rich media solutions which provide that, and organizations really need to understand which of those things they want to deliver based upon the business function and the business outcome they want to achieve.
Well, do you have to have the bandwidth and the capability to have the utmost in order to deliver just some of the basics?
Again, it depends. Yes, certainly you need bandwidth or infrastructure to deliver any service or any technology, but that's then all going to be part of, you know, what your overall organization's plan and how they deliver it. And in fact, I know both DISA and GSA are working extensively on that to deliver that across government, but it goes back to what's the need, and let's not oversubscribe, you know, or undersubscribe. Let's really understand what our need is.
And so, Becky, can the services from DISA be purchased or provisioned in such a way that your needs can go up, your bandwidth and capabilities can go scale up or down depending on the needed hand, so that you don't always have to have huge bandwidth at all times, at all moments, if it's not needed?
Well, I think it depends, Tom. Clearly, that is the objective, is to be able to provide these collaborative information services, not only to folks who are on the backbone, but also to the warfighter down at the tactical edge. And I think today that the network connectivity, the satellite connectivity that we have really does enable us to extend that reach further and further. But we do have a way to go. But what we do is we have a number of services today that I would term our enablers to reaching that goal. And it, besides the collaboration tool, we have a capability we call Global Information Grid Content Delivery Service. And that service basically is a set of servers that are geographically dispersed around the world, and it basically helps to facilitate the delivery of information to the tactical edge. And it's really kind of like a smart network, and it will optimize the content to the most efficient way to get it to the user. And we have seen tremendous enhancements from performance, 30 times increases in performance in getting the data down to the end user. So I think that's really a very interesting capability that we have. It does provide a lot of utility, not only to the backbone, but more importantly to the tactical edge. The other thing that I think these services are extremely value added to us, and kind of touching on a little bit where Gerald was going, is it allows us to really bring in diverse, geographically diverse organizations and people into one session. And so DIS is kind of a good example of that. DIS is a large organization. We're geographically, have a number of offices around the world. I think we're like in 77 locations in 7 countries. And so what we have to do is create opportunities where we have shared situational awareness across the DISA workforce. And so that's kind of hard to do. We have offices with each of the combatant commands who really are our eyes and ears with our customers. So we're using these tools to bring in the DISA family, if you will, to not only to participate in operational updates on how our services are performing, what are some of the operational issues and challenges we're working. But more importantly is when we do program reviews, we're able to bring people across DISA into those program reviews so they have shared situational awareness, because it takes the entire DISA team to deliver a capability. So I think it just enables us to be more responsive to our customers. We can clearly communicate, set expectations, and I think it's just a very exciting time to work in the Department of Defense.
And Dave, how does management deal with all that from the DOD point of view?
Well, again, you know, you have to look at this idea about it as a continuum. And the you know, the Marine that's in Afghanistan may just need to know that a photographer is accurate and timely, right? And then at the other end of the spectrum, you can imagine how, you know, the prize of immersive technologies is what it will do to modeling and simulation and training and opportunities to, you know, to work without having to be in the actual device that you're going to be using. And so everything from medicine to, you know, flying the next generation fighter, right, that you're going to use more and more of these tools to allow you to have a better trained, better equipped, more ready workforce. And so, you know, everything doesn't fit everywhere. And if you're in a bandwidth constrained environment, then you take advantage of content staging and, you know, and so on and so forth. But it's a world that we have to face together. I mean, video is just flying around the world, right? The amount of video that DoD is producing and consuming is just growing exponentially. And so this ability to be connected and to find the stuff that you need to get your job done is just going to continue to grow for all of us.
Now, we've also talked about the idea of diversity of organizations participating and collaborating. And, of course, we have the public sometimes to deal with. We also have supplier base to deal with and different other military organizations or other governmental organizations, NGOs. So it's in collaboration in this type of environment. It's very much everyone into the same hot tub together. So how do we do this securely, and how can we ensure that we're safe in doing all this? Gerald?
Well, it's actually interesting because that brings up this whole concept of what we're calling co-production, where we're all part of producing the results or the outcome that we need. So almost think of it more and more where your customers are also your designers. Your prospective employees may actually help not just define the job description, but actually help, you know, do the job before they've even started. So whether it's your supplier, your customers, citizens, all of those people are now part of this collaborative, you know, production. And that goes back to, you know, earlier theme. You have to really understand the levels of trust that are involved, how you provide the different levels of security to do that. But it's so rapidly helping us accomplish the mission that, you know, we can't just dismiss it.
Yeah, so I was laughing at your hot tub analogy because, you know, that does strike fear in the hearts of a lot of people, right? It's sort of the same thing as cloud computing. You know, I'm happy to be in the cloud as long as it's not the cloud that you're in, right? And so we do have to start thinking about, you know, security a little differently, right? And at one end of the spectrum, the prize is the collaboration. That's the most important thing, right? The knowledge is flying around and people are building on each other's ideas. And so you do some risk management in terms of security that end of the spectrum. And then at the other end of the spectrum, you know, the secure, successfully doing it securely is more importantly, let's say. And so if you're at the end of the spectrum where it's not just about like the marketplace of ideas, but it is about things that are sort of more sensitive in nature, then you better get some fundamental security things right, like identity management, right? So I know who is collaborating and that they are who they say they are. And then I'm able to look at the information in a secure way. If it needs to stay within the boundaries, then it can, and those sorts of things. But there really is a business opportunity for us all here that the security must be thought of differently in the future, right? If you think about it in the past, you will always think about information security separately from information sharing. And the prize for our future will be thinking about secure information sharing, right? How can you make sure that you're sharing information while you're doing security better? Because if you don't, then you'll always be reactive in your security solutions and you'll say, well, you know, I'll have one less vulnerability, one less potential problem if I just cut off access or don't let people collaborate. And that's just not going to work. So if we can think about in the future, it's about stronger identity management, better trained workforce. How do you do secure computing from untrusted computers, virtualization, secure browsers, things like that. You begin to create a world where you're able to collaborate more securely rather than avoid collaboration at all.
And Gerald, as we talk about this whole idea of security, I think it's safe to say that the technology in the network itself, in the pieces of the networking technology from end to end, are gaining the capability to provide security. That is, they can sense the types and different types of data traveling. Maybe it's tagged in a certain way, such that all the worries about who should see what can be built into network intelligence. Tell us about that.
Yes, very much so. So what you're really describing is this is part of the new set of characteristics or capabilities that are part of any network or any communications infrastructure, any collaboration and communications infrastructure. You have to be able to see and understand what's going to attach to your network before it even attaches. You have to understand the different types of devices because it's not just, you know, a people or an individual computer nowadays. It's becoming almost anything. So as you look at what's embedded in your network, now more and more you're talking about the security things, the trust components, all those capabilities and characteristics which you just talked about, and that's really becoming key. The other part of all that is it's not just in isolation. It all has to be together. You're talking about an entire ecosystem, which is people, process, and technology. And so you really have to understand all of those things to be able to deliver that.
And that brings us to the end of this discussion. I want to thank our guest, Dave Wennergren, the Deputy CIO from the Department of Defense, Becky Harris, Program Director of the Program Executive Office of the Global Information Grid Enterprise Services at the Defense Information Systems Agency, and Gerald Charles, Director of Public Sector Internet Business Solutions Group at Cisco. And we thank you for listening to today's panel discussion, The Future of Public Sector Workforce and Workspace Sustainability, brought to you by Cisco on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. To hear this show in its entirety and for more information, just go to federalnewsradio.com, keyword work.
Tired of playing catch up with the news? Stay informed all the time with the Federal News Flash. The Federal News Flash is a daily email from Federal News Radio that will bring you the latest news and information about the federal government and the federal contracting world. Find out about exclusive stories and interviews only heard on Federal News Radio. Sign up for the Federal News Flash at federalnewsradio.com. Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, your source for federal news now. Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, the only radio station dedicated to news for and about the federal government and government contractors. Find us at federalnewsradio.com. Federal News Radio in a Web 2.0 world. Find Federal News Radio on Facebook and Twitter. Follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/FedNewsRadio or join the Federal News Radio group on Facebook. Chat with our team and make connections with others in the federal arena. Email us at fnrcomment@federalnewsradio.com. Visit our website, federalnewsradio.com. Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, your source for federal news. Now.